7BR Part Heard. Hello and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard. This week we're taking a bit of a break from our usual programming and running a back-to-school mini-series for prospective and incoming pupils. I'll be speaking to some of 7BR's juniors across our main practice areas about their experience of pupillage, the type of work to be expected, and their advice for those starting out at the bar. Today I'm speaking to Rose Harvey-Sullivan, who joined Chambers 5 years ago and now enjoys a busy practice encompassing a range of Chambers specialties, including Court of Protection, Personal Injury, Clinical Negligence, Inquests and Family Law. Rose, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So Rose has kindly agreed to talk to us a bit about her Court of Protection work, but I know that you didn't do any of that during your pupillage, so maybe you wouldn't mind just explaining what you did do in your pupillage to start with.
Yeah, sure. So I started with a seat in employment work because I was interested from an equality perspective in that. That was with Geoffrey Jupp in Chambers. I did my 4 months of crime, which everybody in our Chambers does, with Gareth Wheatman. And then I had 4 months doing personal injury, clinical negligence and historical abuse work with William Chapman. And in between all that, I had various weeks and sessions with some of the family practitioners, which is where I sort of heard about Court of Protection work for the first time and wished I'd asked to do a bit more of it during pupillage, but it's difficult to change things at that sort of stage.
So what is Court of Protection work? What do you do now? And how did you move into that, having not done any during pupillage?
My practice now is primarily in care work, Court of Protection work and clinical negligence, inquest type stuff. So mental health comes up a lot in those areas. And that's where I think the real overlap between most of my other types of work and Court of Protection started. So the Court of Protection is concerned with mental capacity. It asks questions about whether somebody has the capacity to make their own decisions or not. And if they lack capacity, the court then has to decide whether it needs to make decisions in that person's best interests, so make decisions on their behalf. And that's the key sort of cornerstone, if you like, for the Court of Protection, is what is in this person's best interests.
Is there a lot of Court of Protection work in Chambers generally? Are there many other members who do it?
There's a fair amount, actually, far more than when I started 5 years ago. So there are half a dozen of us who do it fairly regularly, a couple of times a week, probably. And then there are another 6 or 7 members who do it on a more sort of routine basis alongside other areas of their practice. For me, it's one of my main areas of practice. And I do work with local authorities and I work with solicitors who represent the protected parties. I've also represented family members who might have an interest in what happens for their relative. So there's lots of angles at which you can come to the Court of Protection. Local authorities are always or almost always involved because if somebody lacks capacity, then they may well have an obligation to provide them with care and support. And so that's why they're often involved. And in that sense, there's an overlap with family care work, where obviously the local authority is always involved because they're questioning whether those people's children need to be removed or not. So again, there's overlaps with various other aspects of the practice in Chambers. So lots of our family team, for example, are the people who overlap with the Court of Protection team. But there's also some real overlap with clinical negligence members, particularly those who deal with those who've had really serious injuries and as a result no longer have capacity to make any decisions or perhaps have never had capacity to make decisions. So we're in quite an unusual situation as a Chambers because we have all of these various areas that overlap and we can therefore bring all those types of expertise to the Court of Protection work that we do as a group, which is really nice. So I feel like I'm using a lot of things that I learned about in pupillage, even though I came to Court of Protection probably a year after I finished my pupillage.
What is it that you like about Court Protection work?
What I really like about it is, on the whole, everyone's pretty collaborative. Often in law, you're dealing with a situation where something has already happened and you're trying to rectify that or make it right in some way. So the inquest work I do, for example, something's already happened and we're working out how best to deal with the aftermath, essentially, or working out what happened after the event. With Court of Protection work, obviously something's already happened, but what we're looking at is how can we make the best situation for this person for the future? And so that's a really nice, positive thing to be working in law, where actually it's surprisingly unusual to be doing that. But it's also an area where mostly the parties who are involved in proceedings can work in a very collaborative, supportive manner, because everybody ultimately wants the best thing for the protected party, who we call P. And so even though sometimes people have slightly different visions of what that is, particularly family members, often you can find quite collaborative routes on how to explore all those options and work out the best thing. So there's a lot of opportunity for collaborative working and for building something for the longer term, which is a really satisfying, nice thing to be working in. And also I have a background interest in mental health and mental capacity. So for me, it kind of combines all those different aspects. And so it's quite nice to work in, really.
Maybe you don't mind just explaining how court protection hearings work and how it differs from other practice areas.
Sure. Yeah, it obviously varies depending on the nature of the case. The most common kinds of cases, and perhaps if that's maybe a good starting point for this podcast, the most common kinds of cases are those where a protected party is deprived of their liberty by perhaps being put in a care home. So somebody who may be an elderly resident, maybe they have dementia, and they're not safe to live on their own at home, or certainly it's alleged that they're not. They have therefore been moved into a care home, perhaps by relatives or by the local authority, and they are expressing a wish to return home. In those circumstances, you can bring a challenge. And those, as I talked about, those individuals who support and work around those who lack capacity or may lack capacity, those people have responsibility, some of them, to bring proceedings and get solicitors involved on behalf of the protected party. So you bring proceedings and under what's called a Section 21A challenge to the deprivation of liberty. A common step will be that you have to obtain professional medical evidence in order to demonstrate that somebody actually lacks the capacity in the first place. If somebody doesn't lack capacity, the Court of Protection's role stops. They are only involved with people who actually do lack capacity. So that's a really fundamental cornerstone. Once you've established that bit, or at least sufficiently for the purposes of, say, an interim hearing or whatever, you move on to working out what interim steps you can take to support somebody in the meantime, and then look at what evidence you need in order to provide the court with options for the court to make a decision. Because the trap that people sometimes fall into is the local authority take a view. They'll say, oh, well, we think that the protected party should stay in this care home, even though they don't like it. That's the end of it. But actually, what's best is if the court has options to say, well, could they move back home? Is that a realistic option? Is there another care home they could move to? And the local authority, unfortunately, are usually the ones who have to do the legwork. Even if they might not agree with a particular plan, they still need to provide the detail and the background for the court so that the court can make an informed decision, as opposed to having only one option thrown at them. Obviously, there are funding issues sometimes from a local authority perspective, but now we're going into a bit of a rabbit hole, so perhaps I'll leave it there.
What advice do you have for someone who is either considering pupillage or about to start pupillage and thinks this sounds really interesting?
Well, I know that one of our future pupils who is coming to chambers next year is somebody who has previously worked as an independent mental capacity advocate. And that's somebody who supports and essentially ascertains as best they can the protected party's best interests and looks to help them express that and find different ways in which they can kind of achieve what the protected party wants, and also works in their best interests as a professional. It's not a role that I understand you need to spend many years training for. I believe she's done it, for example, alongside other things. But it's a really great insight, I think, into understanding how the Court of Protection works and getting a better understanding. When you work directly with protected parties, I think it really helps to give you a better understanding of what mental capacity is, and for those who lack it, how we can best support them to be as engaged as possible. So there are lots of additional roles and support figures who exist around the Court of Protection. That's one example, but there are quite a few of them. And so I'd certainly encourage people, if they're interested in this area and not yet at the bar, to look at those kinds of support roles or volunteer roles, so that they can really get an idea of how the area works from a legal perspective, but also on a human level, because I think that really, for me, is the core of Court of Protection. It's always about practical solutions. It's about individuals and their specific personal needs. So working with individuals like that on a regular basis will really help people to understand those sides of things, I think.
I guess moving more broadly then, to sort of wrapping up this mini series, perhaps with some advice about how to go about pupillage interviews, how to go about pupillage applications, and those sort of things.
It's a bit trite, but people say that the best interviews people have are their first and last ones, because they're not expecting too much, or they have got to the stage where they sort of think, well, sod it, let's see what happens. Last chance, might as well sort of go for it and enjoy myself a little bit if you can. But I think that rather than enjoying it, I suppose the point is that you kind of loosen up slightly. And I think one of the things with all jobs, but particularly with the bar, where you're looking at potentially recruiting a colleague who's going to be in your chambers for, you know, decades, although of course people do move around more than they used to, you're looking for somebody who has a bit of something about them that you can almost grip onto a little bit, something that makes them a bit distinctive, shows a bit of personality. And I think that's really key, because it's about finding a chambers that has the right fit for you as a person. I can't believe how lucky I was coming here, because it's a pretty relaxed chambers in lots of ways. Everyone's very open-minded. And even as a really junior person, I felt like I could speak up and ask questions or say what I thought or how things should work. And for me, that works really well. Other people prefer more of a hierarchy, maybe. So, you know, a different chambers, I wouldn't have fitted in well at all at, and it would have made me feel uncomfortable and a bit kind of restrained. So I think allowing your personality to come through a bit is actually no bad thing, because you'll end up in the kind of chambers that will actually suit you in terms of interviews. I would say that that certainly helps in the long term.
Rose, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, Ellie.
Thank you for listening to this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. Rose recently organised a webinar series covering key aspects of cop practice and case law. So if you are interested, details are available on our website and a link in the description.